From coast to coast, state to state, and city to city, many of those dining on the food with integrity of Chipotle's Mexican Grill were sickened by E. coli, salmonella, and norovirus. That so many could be sickened in so many different restaurants across such a broad geographical area by so many different toxins in such a short period of time leads us to ask, what caused the food poisoning outbreak at Chipotle?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 1047th edition of the Food Chain right here on the GCN Radio Network. Or, hey, perhaps you're among our friends tuned in way over there in Giza Village as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Jason Struby on the controls. Hello, Jason.
It's a real pleasure.
Jason, got a question for you.
Fire away.
What caused the food poisoning outbreak at Chipotle restaurant?
That's a tough one. You know, I have to say it was mighty suspicious when that happened. So I don't really want to point any fingers, but I'm just going to leave it at that. I'll say that I think it was pretty...
Suspicious. Okay, it's suspicious. Well, intern producer Dylan Hunsinger, what's your cause for the outbreak at Chipotle?
You know, I think it's very suspicious as well. If I had to hazard a guess...
What the heck do you guys mean by suspicious anyway?
Here's what I think. I think that Chipotle grew exponentially fast in a very small amount of time. So my suspicion is that we've been seeing a lot more foodborne illness outbreaks there as they've grown recently, and that when they first started, they were able to keep really good, really close quality controls, and that they've had a lot, they've gotten a lot more lax in their quality controls.
Okay, so out of control is your reason.
That is my reason.
Okay.
That is my theory.
That's just, well, there's theory. Everybody's entitled to a theory, and that's what we're going to be working with today. What the heck caused the outbreak at Chipotle? Folks, Chipotle Mexican Grill's explosive growth from 16 restaurants to 1,900 in 20 years made it a darling stock of Wall Street and, for many, the go-to walk-up for a quick bite to eat. The company's pitch to hungry consumers was food with integrity, as opposed to competing chains, of course, which presumably were serving food without integrity. No GMOs at Chipotle. Hungry consumers went for the food with integrity in a very big way, making the company's investors very happy. But in October, Chipotle was hit with a food poisoning outbreak that nevertheless to this day, reverberates to this day, as just the other day another Chipotle was shut down by a food poisoning incident. The Chipotle outbreak has sickened diners in a dozen states, coast to coast, with foods contaminated with E. coli, salmonella, and norovirus. Though the outbreak has been thoroughly investigated by Chipotle and the Food and Drug Administration, no cause has yet to be disclosed as to how so many restaurants in so many different states across such a broad geographical area could be contaminated by so many different food poisons in such a short period of time. And that no answers have been forthcoming leads us to ask today, what caused the food poisoning outbreak at Chipotle? And here to help us, we have a couple of people who are in the know about such things. We'll start with Michael Palmer, who is a food safety consultant for Gap Solutions. Michael, welcome aboard.
Thank you for having me here today.
So, food safety consultant, what the heck does that mean?
What does that mean? Well, the complex food system that we live in today, I mean, there's a lot of inputs from the field to the farm to the shelf that you pick your vegetables off of. And so you could kind of stick a food scientist in any part of the way there. And so there to kind of solve those problems and kind of answer those.
Okay. Keeping things safe along the food chain. And Gap Solutions?
Food Safety Gap Solutions.
That's your business.
That's my business.
Who pays your way?
Fellow consumers, people who are interested, at the same time, farmers and consumers out there.
Everybody up and down the food chain.
Up and down the food chain,
safe.
You could get a slice of a food scientist.
Good. My quick question to start things off for you today is, what causes food poisoning?
Well, there's two basic sources. There's a food intoxication, as if you went to the canteen and had too many whiskeys, where you get so many, the threshold of so many microorganisms all at once, you get intoxicated, and then you'll get sick. And then there's an infection where you maybe get one, and then you get two, and just multiply an effect where it gets to that threshold where you do get sick. So there's probably two different ways where you're going to come and get it, where there's an intoxication or a food infection. And so in these three different scenarios with the norovirus, salmonella, and E. coli play into those scenarios.
Well, good. So in Hong Kong once, I happened upon a wonderful Chinese meal, one of those 37-course meals. Along about course 19, they served up some fish. And the second that fish went down the gullet, I knew I was toast.
You said you were intoxicated, right?
Well, that was what you call intoxication, yeah. Where you consume so many bugs that you just know you're toast. As opposed to having a few bugs, which takes a lot longer.
The incubation period that kind of goes through your track.
Well, good. Also with us today, we have Karen Robinson-Jacobs, who is a hospitality industry reporter for the Dallas Morning News. Karen, thank you for joining us.
Good morning.
Pleased to have you aboard. What does a hospitality industry reporter write about?
Well, it's a fancy term to describe. I get to cover most things fun, like restaurants, snacks, sodas, pretty much things that you can legally purchase and have fun.
Mm-hmm. So and that would be something I would dream about doing my whole life, I think.
One of the things that I did cover pretty extensively was the foodborne illness outbreak involving Bluebell ice cream.
Well, Bluebell is a pretty interesting company, for one. It's has a substantial distribution throughout the East Coast, I believe, right?
Well, you have to talk about pre-recall and post-recall.
Pre-recall.
Pre-recall, they were in, I believe, 23 states, particularly in the South, but they were also moving to the West. And I think as one of your, as someone mentioned earlier, you know, when companies expand, it becomes that much harder to really watch what is happening up and down the food chain. And so Bluebell ended up with listeria contamination problems at actually each of its four production facilities.
Oh, my goodness. So not just one plant, but four plants?
Four different plants. There were varying degrees of issues that the federal inspectors found, but all of them were determined. Well, the one in Alabama, there's a lawsuit suggesting that there was a problem there also. I don't know that they've admitted it. But each of the production facilities has been touched in some way by cases of people who say they got ill from food that was ice cream that was prepared there.
Well, Karen, that's a pretty easy problem easy mystery to solve, right? The Bluebell contamination, because the federal inspectors went into the plants and took their swabs and walked around and did some cultures and, oh my goodness, it's listeria, duh.
Well, actually, believe it or not, the way the system works is you get sick, you go to, if you go to a hospital, they take a culture, they put the culture in this huge database, and it could sit there. If they don't know what the exact cause was, that culture could sit there for years. In this particular case, the first known case of someone getting ill from Bluebell goes back to 2010. And, of course, you know, the problem was not really discovered until last year. So
Wait a minute. Bluebell was essentially making ice cream from dirty plants then for 4, 5, 6 years before they were caught.
The connection between Bluebell ice cream and the people getting ill was not made until last year, even though there were cases in the database that date back to 2010.
That was very carefully stated. And well, good. Okay, I'd like to talk a little bit about the bugs that make us sick. And Listeria, where do we find Listeria hiding out?
Everywhere. I guarantee you there's probably Listeria in everybody's kitchen right now. It is a it's a pretty common pathogen. One of the problems that occurred with Bluebell is that they found Listeria in non-food surface areas and didn't take the problem seriously enough. It is very easy to migrate from
Karen, we're going to have to pick that up when we come back. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio program, Michael Olson. Today, what happened to Chipotle? My goodness. Michael Palmer, food safety consultant, Gap Solutions. Karen Robinson Jacobs, hospitality industry reporter, Dallas Morning News. And you, 831-479-1080.
Get this. You can earn a 5-, 6-, or 7-figure income by farming a small parcel of land in or near the city.
You can be old or young.
Rich or poor.
Married or single.
You can own land outright.
Or lease it year to year.
You can grow small fruits on prairie bench lands.
Houseplants in coastal valleys.
Flowers on steep wooded hillsides.
Vegetables in the city green belts.
And ornamentals in neighborhoods of fancy homes.
Get all the help you need to get growing at MetroFarm.com.
Get the complete guide to growing high-value specialty crops for the city at MetroFarm.com.
Get experts to look at your land and assess which crops to grow at MetroFarm.com.
Get advice on how to plan and develop your project at MetroFarm.com.
And get news about the business of farming for the city.
Yes, you can earn a 5-, 6-, or even a 7-figure income by farming high-value specialty crops on a small parcel of land in or near the city.
Grow for the money today at MetroFarm.com. That's MetroFarm.com.
Well, what did happen to Chipotle? That's the question on the table today, and you're invited to weigh in with what you think happened to Chipotle, 831-479-1080. With us today, we have Michael Palmer from Gap Solutions, a food safety consultant. Also, Karen Robinson-Jacobs, a writer for the Dallas Morning News, who covered the Bluebell contamination. Karen, you talked about, 2,600 stores before the contamination was discovered. How many now?
Well, I believe they were in either 23 or 26 states before, but they grew from, it's a family-owned operation initially, and they grew to be the third largest ice cream provider in the country. So they did have rapid growth. And one of the things I think, and someone alluded to this earlier, is the ability as you grow to control your supply chain. And I think that that is part of, going back to Chipotle, I think that's part of what happened. Part of their issue, first of all, it should be, we should remind everyone that federal regulators have not determined exactly what happened with Chipotle.
Right. Nobody knows. Nobody's put their finger on it yet.
Nobody has put their finger on it, exactly. But one of their calling cards as part of their food with integrity was local sourcing. If you are expanding so rapidly that you are everywhere in the country, you've got a lot of local sources. Mm-hmm. And that makes it much, much, much harder.
Well, that was part of one of their sales things as well, then, is that we buy local food and we buy food with integrity, organic, non-GMOs, and so on and so on and so on. So let's go to, as long as we can. Oh, I'm going to go back quickly. We have Listeria. Michael, you talked a little bit about Listeria being something that breeds in the...
The Listeria likes all the spots you really don't want to look at in your house, the cooler, the places where they store the food. It's down in the bottom of the drains. It likes those cold, dark, like the, where the cold, dark, dirty places in the area. But when the Listeria comes out is where, what, in the Bluebell, they found Listeria in the walls. Well, it probably was in the drains first, and it kind of worked its way up because of just the growth of it. And you have to look at the, identify the sources where does it like? Where is it home? Where's home for these places? And for example, Listeria, it's the dark, dirty places like the coolers, the drains, the cracks in the concrete. Yeah,
which means the Bluebell folks weren't, you know, doing swabs in the drains,
or the person who was conducting the swabs wasn't getting on their hands and knees lifting up the drain and swabbing the bottom of the drains. They might have been swabbing the tops of the drain, but it's, you have to really kind of target and destroy, search and destroy. Where you, it kind of sounds almost like
it
Star Wars like, but
it's war, isn't it?
It's get in there and find where it is, and let's put a little bit of water, let's put a little soap, and let's put a little sanitizer on it.
Are all the bugs around us bad?
No. So, hey, everyone, I guarantee it, everyone listening out there, you got salmonella on you. I guarantee it, everyone out there, you got E. coli on you. But 95% of all the bugs out there are really good. They're good. They function. They make us happen. But it's just that 5% of the population that gets us in trouble. And so that's part of the, as a food scientist, that's what I'm looking at. We're looking at the 5% of the bad population of the microorganisms out there to target them and, you know, look at, assess them, and take them out.
It's kind of like people.
What program is this again?
5% of us are very bad.
Yeah. Right, okay. Well, and exactly, and that's the same thing with microorganisms. Some of them are really good and some are really bad. Right now on your skin, you have salmonella. I could lick my hand and I will be okay, but there's that 5% of the salmonella. That's not good for us.
Well, okay, let's look at what happened to Chipotle. Bluebell is a fascinating story, but that was like one store with four plants. Chipotle is like 1,900 stores with 1,900 plants.
So the Chipotle, they have all these restaurants. They have about 16, you know, there's fluctuations between 16 and 1,900, but you know, depending on where you read, 1,600 restaurants. But you know that they can only grow tomatoes in certain places in the world at certain times of the year. And all the ingredients, out of those 64 ingredients, they come from special places. Mm-hmm. And you know, places that you don't want to burn energy to produce something in where it doesn't grow very well. And so you have to source it from different areas. And putting all those ingredients together to make a burrito, you have to kind of put the food matrix together.
Sure. So they have Chipotles in Alaska, but they don't grow tomatoes commercially in Alaska. So
no, probably not yet. Were they actually working? I've worked up in Alaska. They do a lot of greenhouse stuff, but at the same time, you know, they do take care of business.
So essentially, what we have here, whereas Bluebell had four plants, it seems as to me as though Chipotle has 1,600 to 1,900 plants because all of those raw ingredients go into each store. And then they are manufactured into the burrito.
Well, some of the measures that Chipotle has stated that they are doing, they've taken some of the preparation outside of the before. So like for they're going to blanch the onions and put lemon juice on them, and they're also going to do the tomato processing at a centralized location and then ship them to the stores. So kind of take a little bit out of the danger out of the restaurant. And then present
unless they don't swab the bottom of the sump.
Well, but at the same time, they're just trying to put as many hurdles in the way of these microorganisms to prevent.
But Karen, does that make sense? You know, whereas Bluebell had four plants, it seems to me as Chipotle has 1,600 to 1,900 plants.
Absolutely, and you know, we've mentioned it. The more ingredients that you have coming from more places, being touched by more workers, being housed in more, you know, cooling facilities, those all introduce the possibility that something could go wrong along the way, which is why Chipotle is trying to centralize at least part of the process. But again, you know, on their website and their material, they want to still be a local sourcing company, and so they have to try to find a way to reconcile that with the need to have some parts of the operation become more centralized.
Okay. So they're trying to kind of like become a hybrid of what they were. They're trying to centralize a decentralized Oh boy, I'm really lost there. Let's go to the contaminant. Let's go to the outbreak itself, because here we have Chipotle growing from a few stores in 20 years to 1,600 to 1,900 stores. Explosive growth. That doesn't seem like there anything's going wrong. It seems like they're cooking right along, and then all of a sudden things blow up on them in a very significant way. In that, dozen states, coast to coast, stores all over the place, E. coli, salmonella, norovirus, and it's all compressed in like this 2-month period of time. So it's a genuine outbreak of a very decentralized facility. So how do we go about explaining what the heck happened to Chipotle? Karen?
Well, it is a head scratcher to a certain extent, because you have the, you know, CDC federal regulators who try to answer that very question. I think there was initially some suspicion about beef from Australia that would have been product coming from a central supplier, which if you have a central supplier for something, it's obviously it's much easier to track down.
Mm-hmm. That would be like the four plants of Bluebell.
Exactly. Well, and the model that McDonald's uses is that they find a few suppliers who can just supply them with massive amounts of whatever, apples or whatever. And so if there becomes a problem, there's a very short search chain that they have to go through. And Chipotle had a very different model, but I wanted to make the point that there was some suspicion it was Australian beef. That never proved to be conclusive. So at this point, they're not even sure what the ingredient was. So
okay, we're going to hold that, and we're going to pick it up when we get back, Karen. This is the Food Chain Radio program. What happened to Chipotle? 1,600 stores, everything's going fine. Pow, everything falls apart. Coast to coast, state to state, person to person. Three kinds of bugs. What caused that massive outbreak at that compressed period of time? 831-479-1080, right back. Well, what do you think caused the outbreak at Chipotle? Folks, it's really amazing if you think about it. It's so many could be sickened in so many different restaurants across such a broad geographical area by so many different toxins in such a short period of time. It just leads us to scratch our head and say, what caused this foodborne illness outbreak at Chipotle? And so we've got a couple good folks to help us speculate as to what the answer might be. One's Michael Palmer, food safety consultant with GAP Solutions. The other, Karen Robinson-Jacobs, hospitality industry reporter for the Dallas Morning News. Karen, you must have an opinion, as having covered Bluebell. You must look at Chipotle and say, well, I think it's this. What is the this?
Well, actually, I don't have a sense of it, and I just wanted to go back and toss something else out. We've talked about a short period, but the first cases of E. coli surfaced actually back in July of 2015 in Seattle. Right. That was followed in August of 2015 by norovirus in California, then salmonella from tomatoes in Minnesota, then norovirus in Boston. So 2015 was definitely not a good year for Chipotle. It cost them a huge amount across the spectrum in their stock price, in their co-CEO's compensation. Clearly, there are going to be lawsuits coming from this. So it shows that there were issues that stretched over a longer period of time across a number of different products with a number of different pathogens. That makes that much harder to figure out what specifically the issue is. I think what Chipotle is trying to do now, which is the same thing that Bluebell tried to do, is really, really step up their food safety.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, Michael, you're up.
Well,
batter up.
Grab the ram by its horns, norovirus, where does it come from? Well, it comes from one place that everyone uses, the restroom. Norovirus, it gets simple. Hand washing. This is just a breakdown in fundamental food safety practices and food chain practices. They didn't wash their hands. There was an article stated that the employee and the manager were fired who allowed this to happen for the norovirus in Simi Valley. And this is really kind of the cause, where norovirus, it just was a sick employee. How many times have you gone out to eat and seen someone wipe the back of their hand on their nose?
Yesterday?
Yesterday,
as I was going
all
through
the
burrito line, and, you know, I'm totally focused on what's going on here, and I'm ordering the burrito, and right before my eyes, the young gal behind the counter who's making my burrito wiped her arm across her nose.
Gloves or no gloves?
Well, she had gloves, but...
Well, she probably thought it was okay because she had gloves. There's a superstition. When people wear gloves, you come like, it's like, you got magic. You're a little bit more invincible when you wear gloves. But it's the same it's the same thing. You just need to replace those gloves. Maybe even kind of lean over across the girl across the counter. Hey, I noticed that you know, do you have a runny nose today? You know, you politely kill them with kindness. Ask them what's going on. And maybe they might suggest, oh, Mackenzie, can you take over the making of his burrito while I go wash my hands?
I just saw it right in front of my... oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Okay. So is it your contention then that all of this is being brought about by poor employee management?
Well, like Chipotle said, they put a big stake in the ground. February 8th, we're going to train everyone. Chipotle has stated many, many times on February 8th, they were going to close down for lunch for 4 hours and train everyone. Training's where it's at. You need to get your frontline employees trained and hand washing, good practices. But when I ate at Chipotle 2 days ago, I leaned across the counter. I was like, hey, how was that training? And you know what the young girl behind the counter said? I had class. So it's, you know, when the Chipotle states these things, you need to, as a consumer, you need to go verify and, you know, kind of check in with them. Like, did you do the cleaning? And that's one of the other steps that Chipotle said they've done, is where they go out after they have an issue in a restaurant, they clean and sanitize the restaurant. And I even asked the girl, who did the cleaning and sanitize? The employees who work there. There's a lot of pride and ownership of the employees that do work there to, you know, they get those hours to clean and sanitize. And it's not just sanitize it. You have to really, it's the step by step where you do a dry or a wet cleanup first, and then you clean with a detergent or soap, then you sanitize. But a lot of people like to throw around the sanitation as a fast fact.
Let me ask you this then. We're pointing to the employees of Chipotle and saying, you know, you guys are responsible for the norovirus. Why is something, a chain like Subway, which does the same kind of food preparation and management, I mean, instead of you putting it into a corn tortilla, you put it into a bun, but it's the same stuff. So why am I not seeing any disasters with Subway? Karen, what do you think?
Well, part of the issue is sort of the pile-on effect. I think people are very anxious about Chipotle. I think, you know, Chipotle has very, very, very passionate fans, and there was one thing after another with Chipotle. Has Subway or had any instances of norovirus or other infectious bugs? I could look it up right this moment, but we haven't necessarily covered them. But I can tell you that I get notices from the CDC about problems, infections all the time. Generally, they don't sort of rise to this level, and I think that's what Chipotle's problem was. A, you know, they come across with this food with integrity. We're the good guys. We're doing it right. So there's a little bit of they set themselves up as, hey, we're the standard here. And then there was just one thing after another, you know, place after place, different places.
Different places, bugs, different states, different contaminants,
different
everything.
Bugs, different times. And so I think that when all of those messages taken together, it really caused people to say, you know, are they really walking the walk? You know, are they really the good guys that they say they are?
Oh, Michael.
Well, just one thing for the general public out there. Everyone's entitled to know this. If you go to the FDA.gov, you could sign up for these email alerts about when there's a foodborne outbreak of any kind, anywhere from packaging material to Chipotle. You're entitled to that. You pay your taxes. You can get that for free on the CDC and foodsafety.gov and FDA.gov. You can get that for free. But it really kind of goes down to the food matrix that you're putting together with a burrito. You want, what kind of rice do you want? What kind of beans do you want? What kind of, you know, salsa do you want? What type of meat do you want? And kind of putting all this fabric together and kind of tying together all these little risks in one burrito, and then you eat it, and then the girl wipes her nose and hands you your change. That's where you kind of get down to the fabric of, you know, what it is, comparing Subway to Chipotle. It's just different mediums coming together.
Okay, so we're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, 90% of the respondents to my question so far, and there have been well over 100, suggest that this is a response to the food with integrity. This is industrial sabotage. 90% of the respondents are suggesting that. So when we come back, I'm going to ask both of you to respond to that notion. Is that a possibility? This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson. Do stay tuned. Right back. Well, Chipotle hit it big by selling food with integrity, as opposed, of course, to the competing food chains that were selling, one supposes, food without integrity. And so imagine the amazement of those other food chains as they watch the explosive growth of Chipotle. And so when I asked the question, what happened to Chipotle, 90% of the respondents, well over 100 of them, said it had to be an industrial sabotage, either by the manufacturers of GMOs or competing chains. So I'm going to ask you two to, could that be a possibility, Karen?
There, I have not seen, and I have read extensively about this. I haven't seen anything that even remotely suggests that. I think part of it is what we've talked about. Chipotle is so high profile. I think that's why there was a lot more attention on this during the break. I did look up, and Subway has had a number of instances of norovirus, employees coming to work with norovirus and sickening other people, one in Indiana, one in Illinois. So those obviously...
But that's just two.
It probably started with the consumer bringing it to the restaurant and then passing it to the employee. So it's really, if you kind of look at the whole.
Michael, what do you think?
Alrighty, guys. I think if you're sick and you're like, oh, I'm hungry.
Now wait a minute. Was it a industrial sabotage?
No, it's high profile technology. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. All these technologies kind of link up. You got a $400 and $500, you know, stock price. You got a very visible CEO. You're challenging everyone else. Hey, I got better food than you. Well, a tomato's a tomato, an avocado's an avocado. And if you're gonna challenge someone, well, it might fight back. And that's kind of where the combat.
So you think the 90% of the respondents were.
I'd have to challenge 90% of your respondents. Yeah, like that challenging of food quality. I say, you know, I have bigger, stronger, better food. Well, you know, an avocado is an avocado. You know, the same softness in an avocado, the same redness in a tomato.
Okay, let's go to Mary, who's calling in at 831-479-1080. Mary, welcome to The Food Chain.
Hi, Michael and guests. You know, it's interesting because my daughter went to college, and when she left... she left our area and went to a state college in the university system here in California. And she was hospitalized, I think, 6 times with food poisoning. Once while she was eating at the cafeteria on campus. She was in the, you know, dormitory residential halls. And then other times after, she identified pre-made salads at Trader Joe's, which, by the way, also advertises high-quality good food, and a number of restaurants. So while she was hospitalized and on the IVs because she was so low on fluids, they never followed up. Not once. All of those incidences. So I want to know why, you know, our policies vary with foods.
All right, that's
take
one.
Take my answer off the food, off the air.
That's one pissed mama right there.
Oh, one pissed mama. Well, if you for a foodborne illness, you need more than one person. You just can't have an isolated case. If you have two people, it's a foodborne illness, and that's part of what the FDA, the CDC, and all the data tracking links all this information together to kind of identify that source. Is it the salad? Is it the cantaloupe? Is it the spinach? Is it the tomato? Or is it the employees not washing their hands? You have to kind of break it down in a case by case where you do this epidemiology. The technology is there to break it down and really identify, put your finger on the name of the microorganism.
Okay, so we've talked about norovirus and most likely being an employee issue.
Or a customer bringing it to,
bringing it into the restaurant, giving it to the employee.
Yes, it's cause and effect.
Away we go. What about salmonella?
Salmonella is on everything, but at the same time,
the 5% are bad,
but they really pinned it down in Minnesota on the tomatoes, and you know it's kind of like they're throwing the tomato out the wall. I mean, at the same time, they have to get down to the pin on the needle where they can say what was it.
Okay.
And they identified it as the tomato for the salmonella case.
Karen, Subway selling tomatoes too. But they didn't have a big salmonella outbreak. Are they buying tomatoes from somebody else other than the people in Florida that are growing the tomatoes?
Oh, well, there are, you know, people source tomatoes from all over. I think part of it is going to be what Bluebell and Chipotle discovered after the fact is that you do really have to step up your own in-house sanitation. And one of the byproducts of each of these is that companies are spending a lot more. Some say it's a little late for that now, but they are spending a lot more on hiring sanitation experts, on training, on making sure they have the best technology.
And even then, you get the employee that wipes his or her nose right in front of you as you're going through the line.
Or not even that. What I have seen also is someone making food with gloves on. They roll down to the register and take money with the same gloves on.
Well, it's okay if they take the money, but then when they turn around, they should be taking off those gloves because then you restart the cycle.
That is correct.
But if you look for the yeah, I mean it's a case by case. It's in, but at the same time, you know, Subway, you know, Chipotle. Look at what gloves they have. What glove racks do they have in back?
Okay, we're gonna have to take a final break. When we come back, how do we survive eating out? Oh my goodness, this is the Food Chain 831-479-1080. All kinds of people want to talk. So little time to talk. We'll give it a try. Do stay tuned. Well,
hello.
How many of us are going to get sick eating food, Michael?
Well, only 48 million of us. Oh, but if you want to look at it, well, there's 316 million people in America. That means about 1 in 6 of us are going to get sick. That's about 16% of us are guaranteed to get sick.
All right, Dylan, you have something to say in behalf of Chipotle.
Well, one thing that I think is worth mentioning, because we've been talking about the practices of the employees and the employers, and it's worth pointing out that most food service workers do not have paid sick leave, and even if they do, you know, there's nothing to protect a lot of them from any retaliation that the employer might take for them taking that sick leave, and sometimes it's not 100% of the pay that they would otherwise get. So, and Chipotle, after their big meeting, has implemented employee sick leave.
There's something for Chipotle then. Let's go quickly to Anna. Anna, welcome to the Food Chain.
Good morning. I just wanted to add that every time I've eaten at Chipotle's in Monterey County, I always found the food cold. They don't warm things up. You go to any taqueria and the food is nice and hot. Also, they add raw lettuce onto the meat. I mean, why don't they add, like, rice and beans? And then the rice is just white? I don't know. The only reason I went is because my son insisted, and it seemed like the meat was raised well and everything. But everything else, I would not recommend it. Thank you very much.
Okay. Whoops. Sorry about that, Chipotle, but that's just the way it goes sometimes. And let's go to, I think, Tim. Tim, go ahead.
One of the things that I noticed about a lot of food service establishments is that they have employees handling money, dirty plates, and also preparing food. And I think that there may be a link somewhere in there. It only takes once. Somebody has to take some money. Somebody has to clean up somebody's mess, and they don't wash their hands properly, and then you've got a problem.
Cross contamination.
That's exactly the issue. That's a training issue, or as they would say, that's a training opportunity. Either the employees have not been told that, or they've forgotten that, and that is actually on company ownership, company management, to make sure they understand once you take that money, even if you're wearing gloves, you do have to change those gloves.
Well, let me ask you this. What can we do to survive, Karen?
We've
got a couple burritos from Chipotle here on the table. And what can we do? The 1 in 6 of us are going to get sick. What can we do to make certain it's the other guy that gets sick and not us?
Some states, I actually used to live in California, and they post letter grades on the restaurant to give you some sense of at least some of the things that they have found. Restaurateurs hate that and generally fight against it, but that's one method. As was mentioned before, you can find out about any foodborne illness, food recall. It's just a matter of, you know, going to the website and giving them your email address. And also sort of paying attention to what you see in that restaurant. Does it look to you like the workers are using good
sanitation? Keep your eyes open and keep your nose open. Folks, we just ran out of time, but I want to thank you so much for joining us. Thank you, Michael Palmer, food safety consultant, Gap Solutions. Karen Robinson, Jacob, hospitality industry reporter. Folks, we're going to file this under Mike Lowe's second law of the food chain. The farther you go from the source of your food, the less control you have over what's in that food. Thank you all for tuning in.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.